Startups grow in unpredictable ways, but your infrastructure shouldn't. Deel scales with you from employee one to employee 1,000. Deel's real-time payroll engine cuts weeks-long cycles down to minutes. And their global experts keep you compliant as you expand. Plus, startups can tap into perks like up to $25,000 in Deel credits and support programs designed specifically for high-growth teams. Deel is the fastest way to hire, manage, pay, and equip anyone, anywhere. Deel, your forever people platform. Visit deel.com/MOS to learn more and book a demo.
As your company scales, the hardest part isn't ambition, it's alignment. That's why Atlassian built the Teamwork Collection, an AI-powered teamwork platform designed to help teams move faster together. By connecting Jira, Confluence, Loom, and Rovo, teams can easily align work to real business goals, plan and track progress together, remove knowledge silos, and access the real magic of AI plus human collaboration. Visit Atlassian.com/teamchanger to learn more. That's Atlassian.com/teamchanger. On Masters of Scale, we talk a lot about inflection points, those moments when a technology stops being optional and starts being fundamental. AI presents one of those moments, and behind every breakthrough, whether it's medical research or education or even cinematic visual effects, there's infrastructure most people never see. As the essential cloud for AI, CoreWeave is building that foundation. It provides a purpose-built AI cloud designed specifically for pioneers at leading AI labs and enterprises, ready to power the biggest ideas and the boldest ambitions. Ready for anything, ready for AI. To learn more about how CoreWeave powers the world's best AI, go to coreweave.com/readyforanything. Hey folks, Jeff Berman here. This week on the show, we hear extraordinary stories and insight from the legendary Frank Patterson. He's the CEO of Trillith Studios, the beating heart of Georgia's growing film business. Just south of Atlanta, Trillith spans hundreds of acres, boasts more than 30 studios, and is home to a growing number of incredible creators. Trillith is also home to some of Marvel's biggest films and takes an innovative approach to nurturing a new generation of filmmakers and creators. That piece, the nurturing that next generation of filmmakers and creators, is core to Frank. He's a professor and dean emeritus at Florida State's Film School and has mentored hundreds, if not thousands, of young people who are changing the face of the entertainment industry. Frank joined us live on stage in Atlanta at the historic Fox Theater. It's the latest in our Masters of Scale Live series, presented by Capital One Business.
You got to have incredible talent at every position.
It's like this huge push.
There are fires burning when you're going home.
Can you believe it?
Such an idiot. And then you go back to, this is totally going to be amazing.
There are so many easy ways.
I'm supposed to know what to do. I have no idea what to do.
Sorry, we made a mistake.
But you have to time it right.
Oops.
Working out of a three-bedroom apartment.
Stuff that just seems absolutely nutballs. 10 years later, I'm like, well, that's just how you do it.
We haven't made
just how you do it.
This is Masters of Scale.
Good evening, Atlanta. You've spent a career telling stories and helping tell stories. And part of our theme tonight is about world building. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, what's your first memory of seeing a world built on a screen that just took your breath away?
2001, A Space Odyssey. My mom... Now, I didn't know this at the time. She was trying to get away from my dad. So we went to a theater and we watched that film. Mm. I think I was 8. And I'll never forget it. I mean, it's easy to say Kubrick, but that one shot of the ship going across the screen and the sort of feeling of the world that he was asking us to consider. I didn't, obviously didn't understand it at 8, but it's just a memory I'll never forget.
Frank, at the risk of getting too personal too early.
Hey, we're among friends.
We are among friends. Yeah. When you say your mom was trying to get away from your dad, what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, as an adult looking back, my dad's no longer with us. I learned that he struggled with a lot of sickness, a lot of mental health problems. And so, you know, my parents ended up not, their marriage didn't survive. You know, my mom was, you know, an important person in my life. And so, you know, the things that I saw as sort of adventures, like going to see, you know, 2001 Space Odyssey, you know, turned out to be really valuable for me. That world that I grew up in where there was all this tension, and I had an English teacher in high school who pulled me aside. I grew up in a little town in Texas. He said, you know, you're a storyteller. This is, you know, thank goodness for an English teacher to come in and say, you are a storyteller. Get out of this town. Do not grow up here.
Yeah.
And I got a writing scholarship to school. And I think everything that I grew up in was, you know, as an adult looking back, it was a gift.
How do you end up running a massive studio? How do you get from there to where we are today?
I think it was very helpful that I was focused early on how to tell a story. Story was important to me because no matter where you end up in this industry, the real currency is the ability to tell a story. And whether you're a production accountant who's trying to understand why a director made a decision to purchase something, or you're a writer director, it is everything. It's everything that we breathe and leave. And we haven't been doing a great job of it lately as an industry, but we are have some young people that are doing some very cool things. But the bottom line is, I think it was very helpful for me to grow up as focus on story. Then as I learned the craft, I began to realize all these other parts of the industry. And to be honest with you, I was never the best person. I was not a good athlete, but I was always on the team. And I knew how to pull good teams together. So I began to realize that kind of my talent is recognizing talent, right? Mainly just because I'm a good audience. I love talent. When I began to realize, wait a minute, I'm really more of a producer entrepreneur, then I started a couple of production businesses and realized, wait a minute, I should do more than one film at a time. And I began to think of the industry as an industry that has a really incredible social impact if you're handling it the right way, right? And I think through several startups, some failures, some wins, I met who was then the Pinewood team. James Bond movies, you've probably all heard of them, formed here a partnership with Dan Cathy here in Atlanta.
Pinewood is an iconic British film studio that partnered in the creation of the Georgia location. Pinewood sold its stake and the facilities were rebranded as Trilith Studios in 2020.
And it was a facilities organization. And
when you say facilities organization, what does that mean?
It's like renting hotel rooms, right? You're just providing facilities to productions to execute on their production, right? And at the time, the studio was looking for its first leader. And I had given this keynote speech at the Innovation Summit in Zurich. Dan just showed up in my office one day and said, you know, the way you're thinking about industry, you know, we're looking for a leader. And he invited me to come, Les and my wife Leslie and I, to come visit. And I met the Pinewood team, which I thought was very nice, but I wasn't interested in running facilities.
Why not?
I don't know that business. I'm a filmmaker and an entrepreneur and a technologist. At that time, I had just exited a technology company that was making digital humans, and I wasn't really focused on running facilities. But, you know, Dan said something kind of important to me in that first meeting. Think of this as a 700-acre campus that you can paint as an entrepreneur. Hmm. I thought, okay, now that's interesting. He even said, why don't you grab your team from San Francisco and have them move here and build digital humans here? And I thought, okay, he's being serious about this. Like, we should think about this.
So I just want to dial in real quick. When you say digital humans, you don't mean like literal robots walking around.
Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. So I was co-founder and CEO of a company that we called them hyper-realistic digital humans. Mm-hmm. We created the Michael Jackson that appeared at the Billboard Music Awards in 2014. You know, that was 9 years after Michael's death. It was an original song. It was an original performance. And so we did that. It scared the life out of me because, by the way, in dress rehearsal, that performance didn't work.
Oh.
Yeah. So there were only 11 million people watching and 10,000 people live.
What went wrong?
It just didn't work.
It just didn't work.
We were putting together a lot of technologies that didn't want to play nice with each other.
Yeah, an unstable stack.
A very unstable stack. And it just didn't work at dress rehearsal. So that was a very challenging time because it was a startup. We were emerging technology. We didn't have a product market fit. We didn't really, like, tell me where digital humans belong right now, right?
Well, then this is also 10 years
it's
plus
10
ago.
10 years so, ago, yeah. Right? Yeah. So we didn't have product market fit. There was one night back in 2014, I was out of cash. It's a Thursday night for Friday payroll.
Yep.
Every entrepreneur who's been in this room,
we're not going to ask for a raise of hands, yeah, but I'm please imagining raise your there hand. Are a few here.
And because we were doing animation at the highest levels, we were literally animating one of the most famous faces in the world. And we were out of money. And there was that really awkward moment that I had to, am I going to pull payroll, which is, by the way, going to hit the bank account on Monday, and I don't have the finances to cover. I do have a hard lender who's agreed to leverage my house. I haven't told my wife about that yet, so I could lose my business.
Breaking news, Leslie.
Yeah. I could lose my business, my house, and my wife if this goes wrong. So, you know, but if I don't pull payroll, this is a very high-profile company because six of our artists were some of the most famous animator artists in the industry. That's the only way we were able to pull off Michael Jackson at that time. So if I don't pull payroll, it's going to be in the trades in the morning and my business is over, right? So needless to say, I pulled payroll.
Yep.
And we got through it, but it was a very, very much a startup business. And we created some really wonderful tech. And by the way, in the end, it worked out. We had a nice exit out of it. But imagine coming off the heels of that and saying, let's run facilities.
Right.
Like, that's not the plan. And so I think what was exciting about my partnership with Dan was Dan, as a lot of people in this town know, Chick-fil-A is an amazing business, right? And Dan's an amazing leader. He was basically saying, look, just paint, brother, just paint. Because he didn't come from the film industry, yeah. Right? But he loves it. He loves storytelling. And so that's, I think, the good fortune for me was to have that platform to say, okay, now let's start investing in content companies and technology companies, and let's build a place that really is a platform for storytellers, that what's also ultimately become a city for storytellers, a place that, you know, is really unique, I think.
When you came here and you saw this canvas and you were able to envision it as a canvas, what were you able to see that you could build here that made it worth moving cross country,
right,
and starting a new life here?
It was basically, if we made some bets into some emerging content companies and bets into some emerging tech companies at this place that's 20 minutes from the most traveled airport in the world, that has a great culture and a history of innovation, I bet we could go where opportunity is. And so that's kind of where I felt like, okay, let's do this. And fortunately at the time, the Pinewood CEO and investors at that time, you know, was excited about it. Now they recapped, they wanted to focus on facilities and we ended up separating, you know, buying them out. Mm-hmm. But Ivan Dunleavy, who was the CEO of Pinewood at the time, really liked this idea of being entrepreneurial and erecting these other businesses and figuring out how to build this opportunity.
So this was in the 20-teens.
2016, I think, yeah.
When the joke in Hollywood was you would show up at Sunset and Gower, walk in the door, and they'd say, welcome to Netflix, you're greenlit.
Right.
Everything was getting
right.
made.
That's right.
The last few years have been a little...
It's a different environment.
Yeah. So how have you weathered that? What surprised you? And what are you doing differently in this post-COVID,
right,
post-strike, cut back on content spend world that we're now in?
There was things that did really surprise us all, which you just mentioned them, right? The pandemic, right? The stuff that didn't surprise us was, you know, Hollywood has this habit of, and a lot of industries are guilty of this, but we in the film industry are very guilty of this, spending like drunken sailors, waking up hungover. You know, it's like, oh, guess what? You got to pay for this. And we had the good fortune at Trillith of being home to some of the biggest movies in the industry, a lot of Marvel product, as I think everybody here knows. But we knew that there was going to be a correction. And we have recently really widened the aperture of kind of storytellers and businesses that we focused on to support now.
Let's build off of that. Nearly 10 years in here, what is Trillith today?
It's this place that has everything great storytellers need to do anything they can imagine. And by the way, a little exaggeration because we don't have everything yet. I'd say that's our vision, but we have like 75% of everything. We have some of the most amazing technology. We have some of the most amazing homes and a town. And we figure if we can do that, wrap ourselves around the current and next generation of storytellers and really ignite this creative market ecosystem that we have. You know, what are the businesses and the brains that you put into this place that together provide everything that a great storyteller needs to do anything they can imagine? So on one hand, we have James Gunn. I can't wait for you to see his take on Superman. And we have an up-and-coming filmmaker named Demetrius Wynn, who's in the audience, right? And we have everywhere, you know, that we want to be home to those storytellers. And, you know, when I first moved to Hollywood, the sound stages were two blocks away. Mm-hmm. There was a camera house four blocks away. Post was just over the hill in Burbank. Basically, everything you needed was there. And it was a time and a place in Hollywood where a kid who was poor, broke from Texas, could actually live there.
Yeah.
That's very hard to do today.
Part of what I'm hearing is important about this is the physical proximity made a
Absolutely.
Difference.
Place is important. When we talk about everything someone needs to do anything they can imagine, you also have to think about how people live, where they live. Our industry is tough on families because we're traveling all the time.
Right. Right. 4 months away for a movie
shoot.
Oh,
it's brutal.
Yeah.
Right. But we have a town. Come visit y'all if y'all hadn't seen it. We think about where they live, where their kids go to school, what they eat. We have a 65,000 square foot wellness center that when a crew comes in, when you have 5,500 people on the lot working every day, every crew member on that lot has a free membership to a world-class wellness center. We have all the technology and the cameras and lights and transpo and everything. You know, we have, I think, 67 businesses at Trillith that range from the largest lighting and grip company to the best donut shop, you know, in the world. Go have a donut, a hero. It's unbelievable.
And literally a kindergarten there too.
Not just a kindergarten. We have it's called a forest school, and it's a K-12. And so, yes, we have to think about where the kids are going to school,
yeah.
Right? So I think the idea of having all of those resources is what makes it work and not simply great sound stages and great technology, right?
In just a minute, Frank and I are joined on stage by an actor, creator, and entrepreneur who calls Trillith home. Hey folks, Jeff Berman here. Exciting news. Applications are now open for the Masters of Scale Summit. It's happening October 20th through October 22nd in San Francisco, and it is a really special event. Please join our curated community of founders, innovators, and leaders shaping the future. Expect ideas that challenge your assumptions and connections that move your business and maybe even your life forward. It's an experience that can change literally everything. Apply now at mastersofscale.com/apply26. That's mastersofscale.com/apply26.
This is Zeb Farbman, co-founder and CEO of Lightrix, a technology company that creates AI-powered video models and tools.
Most of our research was along the border between computer graphics and image processing. And we thought that if we pair our expertise with this new platform, we will be able to create new tools and new creative experiences that no one did before.
But when the generative AI boom disrupted everything, Lightrix seized the moment with a new burst of innovation. They created LTX2, an open source AI model enabling its users to generate high quality video content, giving them full creative control from concept to delivery on one platform.
I think a lot of the values that we took from academia reflect how we are thinking about our models. We want them to be open. We want a collaborative environment. And we really, really care about efficiency. We always believe deep research is the key to unlocking a competitive advantage and building cool things. It's even more important during the age of AI.
Start creating today with LTX2 at ltx.studio. While everyone was debating whether or not Bitcoin was an asset for their portfolio, CoinShares was quietly building the foundation to invest in it properly. CoinShares launched the world's first Bitcoin ETP back in 2015. Today, they manage nearly $6 billion and are profitable through multiple market cycles. CoinShares is publicly traded on NASDAQ Stockholm and announced in September it is seeking a U.S. listing. CoinShares is the one-stop shop for digital asset investment, passive ETFs, active strategies, and mining exposure. Every approach built to institutional standards. CoinShares. The adults have arrived. Learn more at coinshares.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Scale. You can find the full video from this live event and much more on our YouTube channel. For the second half of our conversation with Frank Patterson, we asked Christina Wren to join us on stage. Christina is an actress, filmmaker, and entrepreneur who has made a home and is working in the Trillith community. You may have seen her in Zack Snyder's Man of Steel or in ABC's Will Trent. She also runs a startup, a production company, with her husband. Tell us, Christina, about your experience here, because you didn't grow up in Georgia. How did you end up here?
Frank, really, and Kelly, who is here in the audience, my husband's aunt. We were in Los Angeles and contemplating moving back to New York because our family's on the East Coast. And Kelly called up my husband and she said, you have to look at what they're doing in Atlanta. Look at what they're doing down in Fayetteville. And he looks it up and he goes, Frank is running this? Because he went to Florida State while Frank was the dean there and they were very close. So he texts Frank, and who I had enjoyed also getting to know over the years. And you said, come on down, and showed him around. And he immediately came home and said, we gotta move there. It's amazing what they're doing. And he pitched me and sold me. And so it's been almost 3 years and we really enjoyed being down here.
Christina, one of the things that I'm struck by from Frank's narrative is as a creator, as a storyteller, then having to actually learn the business side of it. And I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, they have a spark an idea or they're a technologist, whatever it might be. But then all of a sudden, the reality of actually having to build and run a business comes along. What's it been like going on that part of the journey for you?
Yeah, so we have a production company, Two Kids with a Camera, that we started 2010-ish. And so, we make films and streaming series and such, but we also do a lot of branded content for big corporate clients. So we have something for American Express right now and Lowe's, Cisco, et cetera. We started very small. And so I think for us, it's been a natural build over time, and that has been very successful. We didn't pitch really big and run an office in Soho and then like run ourselves into the ground really quickly.
Yeah.
And that has been, I think, maybe our strongest suit. And I think because we center story, because, you know, of our backgrounds, we can bring that to our clients and say, story is how you're going to connect with people, whether it's at your live event or as you're trying to share the information that you guys have been researching, you will connect and your information will land in a deeper way.
There's so much that we as entrepreneurs have to figure out. And here we are in 2025, and you know, we can go on ChatGPT or Claude and ask a whole bunch of questions and get really smart really quickly. But when you were starting your production studio, that wasn't there. So just really basics, like how'd you learn how much to charge? How did you mm-hmm. learn about production accounting? How did you actually build the, as a creative, it's not obvious that one would be great at doing that too.
Yeah.
So how did that play out for you?
I mean, it was a lot of trial and error. Like we started our company with LegalZoom, you know, mm-hmm. so there were resources like that we could just,
shout out LegalZoom.
shout out to LegalZoom. And I think, honestly, we're severely undercharging for a very long time. I think it helped us win business as mm-hmm. a young company.
Yep.
But we were scrambling. So we had to learn. I think that was one of the biggest things, because as an artist, and I think anyone who's passionate about their ideas, sometimes you're just so excited to do it that you're like, whatever, I'll just do it for you.
Yep.
And then really when we started working, I think maybe the first job we had that our eyes were kind of open to that was for Google. up in, you know, Mountain View, and just recognizing if you want to make a living and you're working with companies like that, you need to think bigger. I think also markets change. And so there is sort of, I feel like I'm always just eavesdropping. I'm sort of like, okay, what are you doing with yours? And what are we doing now? And, you know, because I didn't go to business school, you know, I went to theater school. And so there is a trial and error, but I think that's okay. Like, and I think that is part of learning the value of your product. You have to kind of test and say, okay, this budget, everyone's saying yes to without negotiating. Maybe we could go a little higher. You know, maybe we can see value in that.
What's been different for you about being in Georgia with Trilith than it was being in Los Angeles?
Quality of life here has shot through the roof. We have a much bigger, nicer home than we would have, you know. Honestly, we love our kids. Our kids are at the Forest School at Trilith. They're flourishing. They really like, they're just like brilliant little dudes, and we really appreciate what's going on there. So it really is a special place. The Southern hospitality is very real. You know, it's very friendly. It's very collaborative. And so that's just been really incredible to get some of our projects off the ground, both some of our like indie creative projects as well as our client work.
I want to bring us home with a few questions for each of you. So I'm curious, as you reflect on your careers, each of you, what's a moment that stood out that was one moment that was a real tipping point in your career?
I had a very lucky moment as an actor, which is that Zack Snyder saw me in a hummus commercial and then wanted to work with me. So that, I mean, sort of launched me as an actor a little bit. In terms of my production company, we're in an interesting moment right now, which is exciting and hopefully kind of will be one of those moments where we are just thinking bigger and starting to pitch bigger for our next films. And so we have a feature right now that we're working on. Actually, Lauren Petsky, one of the teachers at the Trilith Institute, she's a local television director, and I met her through my work with Women of Color Filmmakers. She came on as an instructor for us. And she's going to be directing, Demetrius is producing, and it's about a high school girls basketball team and based here in Atlanta in Georgia. And so this is a big moment, I'd say, for me as a producer to come in and say, okay, I'm going to be brave. I'm going to think bigger. I'm going to, you know, reach out to different types of people that we're aiming to work with. And so I feel like I'm in that moment right now.
Amazing. Yeah, yeah. Frank, one moment for you.
I was younger, much younger. On my first film, I had raised money and I had investors, and I went to go make the movie, and I had one of those moments where you realize, I shouldn't be doing this. I don't know what I'm doing. And it was the first day of shooting, and I don't know what I'm doing. I'm a complete imposter, right? Mm. Never made a movie. This is ridiculous. I'm going to lose everybody's money. And I started throwing up. So every morning I would throw up. Mm. I began to realize my fear was, what if this movie stops? What if it stops? Mm. And Julie Corman said to me, you're thinking about it all wrong. Mm. It's funded. It's going to get made. It's just on you how good it's going to get made, sure. You know? And it was just relief, like, of course, this is going to get made. I got to wake up here. And then one of the investors, Mr. Winter, said, I didn't invest in you so you could throw up.
Mm. You know,
I invested in you because I believe in what you can do. Embrace the opportunity. And so since then, it's just been like, I got to believe in myself.
Second question for each of you. One thing that has surprised you about the industry?
Social media has really surprised me. It, like, when I was starting out, it was much more just people sharing funny photos at a bar and things like that. And now it really is such a huge tool that artists and filmmakers and businesses really kind of have to learn how to use and use well. And so it's an amazing opportunity to be able to market for yourself in that way. That's just been a really neat and surprising thing that has radically transformed the entertainment industry.
And, you know, building on that, I'm often just surprised at how boldly, you know, I love the young filmmakers or the young storytellers, the young entrepreneurs that, like, nope, doesn't matter how it's done, I'm doing it. And that's really important.
We have a number of early stage founders in the room. Super grateful, by the way, to our partner, Capital One Business, that helps bring early stage founders to events like this, brings them to our summit in October in San Francisco. By the way, the deadline for applications is coming up. And we have a lot of them in our audience because they're coming and looking for just that one nugget, that one bit of advice that is going to get them over a hurdle, get them through a hard day, help them solve a problem that they have no earthly idea how they're going to solve it. So if there's a piece of advice that you can offer to those early stage founders who are with us, what's that advice?
Jim Burney, are you here? Stand up for me if you don't mind. I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
Yeah,
how old are you, Jim?
Jim's 59.
59. You're in the middle of a startup right now called what? Do you know how we're going to be successful? You have it figured out? Okay. That guy has done more businesses.
All right. So just so we cap 24 watts.
24 watts. It's a kid's company. By the way, 24 watts is the amount of energy the human brain expends when you're feeling inspired. That is one of the smartest human beings in the world. He didn't know how he's going to succeed. So no one knows. Just keep pivoting until you get that product market fit or whatever it is that you're trying to do. And it's always scary and there's really tough nights, but it's a club.
The great author, Yale Doctorow, had a line that I'm going to paraphrase because I won't nail it. He said, writing is like driving at night. You can only see as far as the headlights show you, but somehow you make your way
somehow
home.
Somehow you make your way home.
Yeah. Sort of reminds me of that. Christina, one piece of advice.
Mine is fairly similar, but I think figuring out really what is the most specific, the most distinct thing that you are passionate about, that you bring to the table, that your background offers you, and focus in on that. Because there are so many creatives, so many startups, so many businesses. But when you can figure out where is the need and how you can fill it and just keep iterating, keep honing that, rather than trying to watch someone else's success and be like, oh, that was cool. Let me, mimic that or whatever. Yeah, like be as specific as you can and keep sharpening that.
So we're going to have to come back to Atlanta to do this again with you.
Yeah.
I want to thank you both for being with us tonight. Thank our in-person audience for being with us. Thank the incredible team that helps put this together. We can't do any of this without all of you. So grateful to every single one of you. And
thank you for coming, by the way. This is really great. We're so glad you're here.
No, it's really our pleasure and it's our honor. And I'm gonna encourage people to get down to Trilla to take a
Please.
Look because what you're building is spectacular. Thank you all so
thank
much
you.
And thank you.
Thank you.
Frank's energy is infectious. Seeing what he and the Trilith team are building in Georgia is an absolute inspiration, and it is no wonder people like Christina Wren are feeling the pull to make Trilith their creative home. Special thanks to our live events team, the incredible folks at the Fox Theater in Atlanta, and our wonderful partners at Capital One Business. To learn more about our upcoming Masters of Scale live event in Los Angeles on June 17th, go to mastersofscale.com/events. That's mastersofscale.com/events. I'm Jeff Berman. Thank you for listening. AI breakthroughs are quickly reshaping every industry around the world. Healthcare, education, science, entertainment, and beyond. But true global scale only happens when the underlying infrastructure can maintain pace with the rapid speed of innovation. As the essential cloud for AI, CoreWeave is a purpose-built cloud made for the real demands of today's most complex AI models, bringing the pace, performance, and partnership leading pioneers need to continue pushing boundaries. Ready for anything? Ready for AI. To learn more about how CoreWeave powers the world's best AI, go to coreweave.com/ready-for-anything. Hey folks, if you enjoyed our recent episode with my friend Matt Abrahams, the brilliant author and academic has his own podcast, Think Fast, Talk Smart. Twice a week, the Stanford lecturer sits down with experts to discuss their best advice to hone and develop your communication skills. Learn to stress less about public speaking, make more meaningful small talk, and much more. You'll always get science-backed strategies and actionable tips you can use right away. And Matt is just a fantastic guy. You're going to love having him in your ear. Listen to Think Fast, Talk Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt. My podcast, Search Engine, has a new two-part series for you. Of all the new technologies coming out of AI, the most transformative one might be driverless cars. They're already on the road in 10 American cities, and they're quickly coming to more. We tell the story of how we got here. the secret team at Google that spent 15 years building what might be the safest vehicle on the road. And we cover the fights brewing in blue cities, where unions and politicians are working to keep those cars off the streets. Listen to Search Engine wherever you get your podcasts.
Masters of Scale is a Wait What original. Our executive producer is Eve Tro. Our senior producer is Trisha Bobita. The production team includes Masha Makotunina and Brandon Klein. Our senior talent executive is Stephanie Stern. Mixing and mastering by Aaron Bastinelli and Brian Pugh. Original music by Ryan Holiday. Our head of podcasts is Lital Malad. Visit mastersofscale.com to find the transcript for this episode and to subscribe to our newsletter.